Anna.
Welcome.
Oh, I'm sorry I'm late.
You haven't come on yet.
Okay. The time just gets away from me. I wait for 6:30 while I'm doing something, then I look up and it's 3 or 4 minutes past. So.
Well, we haven't missed anything yet.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Are there any questions from yesterday or the previous classes? Or should I just go into section 37?
Okay.
I'm okay. Do you have a question, Malka? Because I don't.
No, no question.
Okay. So I'll start with the L'shem Yichud. We're in section 37. We're starting with verse 302 in the Parsha of Noah from the Sulam commentary on the Zohar. L'shem Yichud kudsha b'richu ishtim be'itilu urchimu itilu utilu urchimu le'achta l'shem yodhe govalte v'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael le'mud Torah mitzvah la'asok Torah mitzvah Vaihino Amadunai Lohino Elena Maseya Deno Kanane Elena Maseya Deno Kananehu. Shelosha Ale Bene Noach. Kiuma de Kol Alma. Kiuma de Raza Ila Aumei Umae Ile. Nafsa Kol Haare. Hainu Raza Datslat Givavnin Ilain Dekad Hahu Nahar Denagid Benayafik Ashke Lagin Tabahela Didlat Ilain Ilain Umataman Eats Parshan Gavavnin Diltata Kolchad Bihad Kalil Bihav Reya Leachza'a Dikara Yekud Shabarichu Eat Parshat Leela Witata Vehu Ad Beilae There are three sons of Noah. They are the existence of the entire world. The word existence indicates the mochin of the female principle, which is called the world. They are the existence of the supernal secret, the mochin of Bina, the words. And of them was the whole earth overspread, means that all human souls are descended from them. They are the secret of the three supernal colors of Bina, which are the three columns. When the river that comes out from Eden, and which is Zeranpin, watered the garden, which is the female principle, it watered it by the power of the three supernal columns, by the power of the supernal Bina. Then the lower colors, white, red, and black, which are the secret of the lower three columns of the female principle, expanded. Each of these colors is included in the other to show that the glory of the Holy One, blessed be He, extends up to Bina and down to Malchut, and is one above and below. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Isn't there three rivers that flow out of the garden?
There's one river that flows out of the garden, and it is then split into four rivers.
Four rivers, okay. And the one that's in the garden is the Euphrates? Or the Pishon?
Pishon, yes. Pishon flows out of the garden, and then it becomes the Euphrates, the Nile, the Jordan, and the Pishon is also there, but it's not the same Pishon. It's in a different frame, in the physical frame.
Okay. Is the mouth of the garden of the mouth of the garden, the physical land, is that where the patriarchs are buried? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Sarah and Leah and Hamarel? Is that what's called the mouth of the garden, which would be the mouth of the river?
Yes, it's the cave of Machpelah. That's where Adam and Eve are buried, Abraham and Sarah are buried, Isaac and Rivka are buried, and Jacob and Leah are buried. Rachel is buried on the road, and Joseph is buried in Shechem.
Okay.
Aaron and Moses are buried outside of the land.
Mm-hmm.
And King David is buried on one of the burial sites in Israel. I don't remember which one. One of the hills around Jerusalem. One of the burial cemeteries in Jerusalem, basically. And you basically have four energies, locations within Israel. Jerusalem is one, Shechem is one, the Kinneret, Tiberias is one. Safat and Tiberias are the same one. And I try and remember the fourth one. I think it's Beersheba is the fourth one, but I'm not 100% sure on what that.
Mm-hmm. So basically,
I would have felt maybe Hebron.
Hebron.
Mm-hmm.
In English, it's Hebron, but in Hebrew, the bed is a vet, so it's Hebron. Mm-hmm. And you're right, that is the fourth one.
I was blessed to have been able to go there.
Well, if you're energy sensitive, when you visit those four locations, Israel itself is very energy intensive. Anywhere in the land is energy intensive, but when you're in those locations, the intensity even multiplies.
So the waters, the rivers, the waters, the that are in the Garden of Eden is basically representing Bina, and she is giving forth her light to the outside, to the lower gardens.
That's correct. But the lower garden is Zeron 10 of Malchut.
Right.
The upper garden is Zeron 10 of Bina.
Right.
And the water is Chesed that flows between Bina and Malchut.
So, and again, tell me the colors of the upper gardens. I know you said it was white,
no,
black.
This verse is telling us that the light of the lower colors is white, which is right column, red, which is left column, and black, which is central column. But it's really not black, it's blue in the physical world. It's the color Tekelet, which comes from the snail, the sea snail, that only lives along the Mediterranean coast where the tribe of Zebulun lived.
Mm-hmm.
And that sea snail, when it dies, it gives off a liquid that was used as the dye, but it requires the sun to shine on that liquid for it to turn to the color blue, the color Tehelet. But initially, it's black. Without the sun, without the light of the sun, it remains black.
Mm.
You get a sense of why the lower colors are called that. And the upper colors, when you asked this before, I said you need to see them for yourselves because they defy description.
Okay.
And that's why we teach you to meditate.
Hello?
Utilizing the Hebrew letters. Yes, Brandy.
I have an FYI. You were talking about the central column being black, but it in our world it's blue, the Tehelet blue. Well, back in the time when Egypt and we were in Egypt, a lot of blue eye makeup was used, and people thought that it was just decoration. But actually, when they analyzed it, the blue was actually an antiseptic or an antibiotic, and it kept the people from getting eye infections. So since central column is balanced, and it is the black blue, and it's Tehelet, and it comes from the snail that's in that area, I'm thinking that it may be the same blue that was used for the eyes to keep them from being infected.
The antibiotic that science is now telling us, that is not the same Tehelet. It's a different blue, which is why when someone dreams in the color blue, and you don't take this just across the board, you really have to discuss the dream in total. But So when you see blue in the dream, it's considered to be a negative image because it's coming from the Egyptians who were utilizing that color blue, which is not the same color as Tehelet.
And
you have to understand that the Egyptian culture is essentially oriented to physicality. It's oriented to body consciousness. That's why they embalm their bodies. Whereas, the children of Israel were teaching that it's not body consciousness, but soul consciousness that prevails. And that's what the conflict with the negative system, that was the conflict between the Egyptians and the children of Israel. And that conflict still goes on today. And that's why our modern Kabbalists have said that the Western world is really today's Egypt. Because the essence of today's culture, Western culture, is about body consciousness and not spiritual pursuits.
And also the little snail or shell animal that produces the dawn disappeared for thousands of years. And it appeared on the scene, Brandy, about the time that I met your group, which was the early, like somewhere around 92 or 93. And when it appeared on the scene, when everybody was real excited because the animal had reappeared, I had a picture of it and I passed it around the group and I never got it back. But before too long, then it was, you know, the news was out, so it wasn't so bad. But for the longest time, you know, didn't you have my picture?
And here you have the essence of the discussions in the machloket within the Judaism today, because the knowledge of where that dye came from had been lost for thousands of years, at least 2,000 years. And when it returned and it was presented to the rabbis, the conflict was, wait a second, there's no disappearance in spirituality, and so we were using all white in our tzitzit, but the Torah tells us to have one blue dye, one blue string. So the rabbis, the Orthodox communities, essentially said, no, we're not changing. We're going to honor the tradition. Whereas the conservative movement and some of the Orthodox rabbis did accept it. And so you have this machloket today where people will not use the tehelet in their tzitzit and others that require it. So welcome to our world that was waiting for Mashiach to clear all of this up.
Well, in 1995, when Tony and I went to Israel on our own, I was able to get a set of tzitzit that had the tehelet string in it. So,
right.
You know, I was able to show it to the students, you know, so. But
yeah.
It's a pretty blue. You know, it's like the sky. It's a little bit darker than the sky, but very pretty.
Well, the metaphor that the Zohar describes is that the color tehelet is the color of the sea, which is the color of the sky, which is how we progress from the physical world through chesed, which is the sea, to heaven, which is the sky. That's the metaphor from the Zohar. It's in more than one place within the Zohar.
Well, I think when the Shamir worm comes on the scene, we really can get excited.
You want to know where he is?
Yeah, the inner earth, probably.
It's very easy to find him. He's in the inner earth.
Mm-hmm. Also, the unicorn, too. So then, Malka, your question
exactly. One
class was about the coverings on the tabernacle. And they used the word dolphin. And Hanok, isn't it really the unicorn skin?
Well, the word in Hebrew is tahash. It's the tahash skins. And there are multiple opinions as to which animal it is. One of which is that it's the unicorn, and that the unicorn still exists within the inner earth, within a different dimension than our physical one. And another opinion is that it's the dolphin, but that really doesn't hold up.
Right.
And again, we're waiting for Eliyahu, and we're waiting for the Mashiach to answer these questions. But the point is, you don't wait. You've got to go out and find it yourself. So one of the meditations is to go searching throughout the universes for the Shamir worm. And another is to go searching for the unicorn. And another is for a whole other issue. You know, all these different questions.
When I have the lesson on the letter Shin, I make little bread dough worms with raisin eyes and teach about the Shamir. Because by now, you know, that was 15 years ago when it was, you know, no one knew what the Shamir worm was. And today,
yeah.
I'm sure more about it. I think that now we create. The interest is when we expose people to them and the idea that they were created, you know, the twilight of Shabbat. That's a bad thing when you don't teach,
right.
You forget.
Well, in today's world, they are not teaching about the Shamir to children right now. So students were very fortunate to be exposed to it.
Mm-hmm. This was my first adult class and classes after that from like 2004 to about 2016. That was why I worked in food with each letter of the alphabet because it gave you an opportunity to review the letter, to have a break, to eat a bite, and learn to say the blessings before you ate, and then tell them a little bit that was connected to Torah. So it accomplished a lot.
Which is the way teaching should be done. But teaching, having people eat through the internet doesn't work yet. I'll have to work on that. I have to work on teleporting all the food that I don't cook to all of you.
Well, I've often thought, I wish you were sitting at our table, you know.
Actually, I am. You're just not looking around to see me.
No, I see you, but I mean, I'd like you to be right there, body and consciousness.
Baruch Hashem, thank you.
Yes.
We have not finished this verse, so.
Okay.
Because the important thing to realize, the colors are the secret of the lower three columns of the female principle expanded. and each of these colors are included in the others. What is that describing? You have a right column that has three columns within it. You have a left column that has three columns within it. And a central column that has three columns within it. So now you have the nine Sephirot. Yet, is there a Malchut in each column? Or is there only one Malchut? The Zohar isn't telling us. It's just hinting to us about the nine. It's also in this verse, it's telling us, teaching us, that every human soul is no longer connected to Adam, but is connected to Noah and his three sons.
Right. And the three sons are a metaphor for the three columns. And, well, they were replaying that since comes from the three sons.
Right. And Noah, by being called a tzaddik, is there on pin. So what is Malchut in this discussion? And that's the answer to whether there's a Malchut in each of the three sons. Each of the three sons has a wife.
Well, if even the worlds have a Malchut, then it seems like each would have a Malchut.
Yes, but you have to ask the question and then find the answer for yourself.
So, hello. When you said that each one had a wife, which is considered Malchut, which is a female principle, right? So,
yes.
My next question is, the ones that are not married, that do not have a wife, do they have a Malchut?
As a male, no.
As a male, no. He does not have a Malchut. Okay. So,
not even if they
let me finish. A male who has never been married does not have a Malchut. But a male who has become married and then possibly divorced or widowed or a widower, he does not lose the energy of that Malchut, so he still has it. The same idea of why a woman who gets married becomes a widow, she still is, according to Orthodox halakha, she should be still covering her hair. But so she's not married anymore. But she never loses that energy that she is received by going under the chuppah. Now, I'm not saying that everybody has to start wearing wigs or hats or whatever. I'm just describing the halakha according to the Orthodox teachings as of today, but each of us has to decide what is right for each one of us.
What does Kabbalah say?
I'm using it as a metaphor. What does Kabbalah say about what? Whether a woman should cover her hair?
Yeah. Yes. When she's a widowed or not married any longer, or had a decree of divorce, then what does Kabbalah say about covering her head?
The Kabbalah says that she should follow the customs of her community. Because she doesn't want to stand out from her community, be separated from her community. But if her community is married women wear wigs, shtetls, or hats, then she should follow that custom because she has not lost that energy.
So how does, if she can remarry due to a divorce or due to a being a widow, how does the male know that she is no longer connected to a male?
Well, she will always be connected to the male if she's married under a chuppah. She'll always be connected to the male. She's, you know, having intercourse once with a man, male, she is connected to that male energy.
Okay. So how does another mate know that she's, well, for another term, for just a word, available for marriage?
Can I make a statement?
Please.
Well, if she doesn't have the wedding band on, that's one little signal.
That is one signal. Another signal is that she has female friends who are constantly trying to fix her up or fix the men up with somebody.
Okay.
It's not hard to find out if somebody is available.
True. That's true. Just asking them the question.
I understand. And the other way you know that she's available is the fact that you, if somebody marries her and then doesn't die, because if he's the second, if he dies the second husband, she's considered a black widow and is no longer available according to Orthodox law.
Wow. Yeah.
Which is why Tamar could never marry Yuda's third son. Because the two, the first two of his sons died being married to her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he sent her away.
Mm-hmm. So, going back to the question about Malkut, so not all the souls of the world have a Malkut if they have not been, the males have not been married. They don't have that female aspect. So
correct.
They would reincarnate into another vessel or another person so that they could correct that blemish, I guess you would say, or correct that tikkun for not being married, so that they can have the Malkut, which is the female aspect of a soul.
Correct.
What if they were married in a previous reincarnation? I remember there was one sage that we studied, I don't know if it was in the Gates of Reincarnation, that didn't have, well, that was children. And he didn't need to have children because he had them in a previous generation. So that wasn't a mate.
No. No. If a man is never married, he's not really considered a male. He's not considered
right.
A complete man.
So a world, it'd be whichever world that may be, can never be complete when the souls pass through that world, if that male was not married. So that world could never have the tenth aspect or completion of that world, because some of those souls, the male souls, do not have the Malkut. So until that female aspect is completed in all the souls inside that world, then that role would be considered complete.
Would be considered incomplete until all of the men were married.
Right. But until then, it's not complete with the 10 separate inside that world.
Correct.
So, back the question, does all worlds have a Malkuth? Yes and no. That's kind of an open-end.
Welcome to Kufu Kabbalah.
That's an open-end question, basically. Because we don't know.
You have a
we
question.
Truly don't know.
Well, you don't know. Now let's define the frame of reference. Are you talking about all human beings living in the physical world? Are you talking about the souls living in Zerampin? Are you talking about the four different worlds of Atzilut, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya? You have to define your frame of reference.
You spoke about the
world. So one world is a man, is a physical human. That's one world. And if he's never married, then that world, his world, is not complete.
Well, in the physical world, as we are in here in Malkut, in the physical world, there's lots of men that are not married, and there's lots of women that aren't married. So I guess I'm speaking of a reference point.
There are relatively few men and relatively few women who have never been married.
True, but I don't think we were talking about putting a count on what we're talking about. We're just talking as Malkut. Not every world has a Malkut. And that's very true. There is a small percentage of people that aren't married, but as time goes on, there's count is increasing that they're not. They choose not to be married. But
can we say but not every individual within that world has a Malkuth?
Right.
Because it's relative to the individual. So
it's always related to the individual. But let me go further and confuse the issue. Because you don't want me to confuse the issue? Okay.
I do. I'm still trying to process the first confusion. I'm kidding. Go forward.
Okay. So you can have... Your term was, as time goes on, there are more and more people who are not getting married. But that is really not true, because the definition of a marriage, there's three ways to acquire a wife. One is to go under the chuppah with a contract, the ketubah. One is to sleep with a man. That means you're married to him. And the third, I forget what the action is, but there's you can just announce it to the world.
I think they call it a covenant marriage today.
Right. Well, I haven't heard that term in a while, but that's very possibly. I don't know if they're still calling it that. But those are the three ways that you can acquire a wife. And So that as time goes on, there are very few women who have not been intimate with a man. So you can't really say that as time goes on, there's more people not being married. The question is, if you're intimate with a man and he's intimate with a woman, you're married, but it's not a really productive marriage, obviously, because it is what it is. And then the better way to become married is to go with a ketubah and a contract under the chuppah. That's the best way, and that way you get a more complete malchut connected to the zeranpin, connected to the nine sephirot of the male. And now that I hear such quiet, I think I should get off the phone before you start throwing the tomatoes.
I've been throwing them. You haven't received them?
No, I only count the rotten tomatoes, and Marco, you would never throw a rotten tomato.
No, it's a nice, juicy red one.
At our 7 o'clock class, we'll count the Omer and have questions and answers.
Yeah, there's my phone. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You all have a beautiful evening. Shalom.
Shalom.